These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
And it's Talking Twins time, which means Zolga, Jake Depew, and executive producer extraordinaire Declan Goff, as we are now, Jake, at the All-Star break. We are, I believe, approximately 2 weeks away from the trade deadline, which is going to fall on Friday, July the 30th. And despite the fact the Twins just swept a four-game series from the woeful Detroit Tigers, the reality is that the season is done. But that doesn't mean the interest is done, because there's certainly going to be trade talks picking up. Nelson Cruz, you got to think, is gone. Andrelton Simmons, you got to think, is gone. I don't think Josh Donaldson goes unless they basically give him away, because they're, you know, if they trade him to a team and get something back, they're certainly going to be expected to pick up part of the contract. I think Jose Berríos stays. Let me run past you the guy that I've become more and more convinced they're going to trade, and I think as much as it might hurt, I think it also makes some sense. Taylor Rogers. Taylor Rogers is going to turn 31 in December. So unlike Berríos, he's not that young now. He's a aging reliever where, as bad as Twins bullpen has been, a lot of teams are confident they can ordinarily find guys. He also, and this is where it gets sticky, and I know the people are going to say cheap poll ads, but it's a reality. He also, like Berríos, is arbitration eligible this offseason and then a free agent after 2022. My thinking is this. Age combined with the Twins' fear that if this does go to arbitration this offseason, Taylor Rogers might get paid pretty well on a one-year deal. And I don't think this is a team that's going to want to sign a guy going into his age 32 season long-term. I think there's a really good case to be made that Taylor Rogers is a former Twin after July 30th. What do you think of that hot take?
Oh, I don't think that's a hot take. I mean, I think there's probably, in my view, a better than 50-50 chance that he does get moved for all of the reasons that you just said. And I think a good comp for that trade, if they were to make it, is Ryan Pressly. Pressly, of course, was not an elite reliever when he got traded and turned into an elite reliever with Houston. Literally the day after he got traded, he became like unhittable with Houston, and Houston unlocked all of these things in Pressly that the Twins couldn't do for years. And now he's one of the best relievers in baseball and an all-star this year. So if you look at that trade, Pressly had 1.5 years left of team control, just like Taylor Rogers does now. They got Jorge Alcala and Gilberto Celestino back in that trade. Right now, that's looking like a really bad trade for the Twins. You know, I mean, Alcala has potential for sure, but he's been pretty bad this year. And certainly is nowhere near the level of anything close to what Ryan Pressly has done these last few years. And then Celestino has potential for sure, but it's sort of wait and see mode for him. He's in a little bit over his head, I think, right now. He should be at AAA getting at bats. But the fact that Presley's turned into this super elite reliever and that the Astros were able to get that out of him when the Twins couldn't, is a bad look. But so if you think about the return for Taylor Rogers, it has to be more than that. You know, I mean, they got a starter at the time, Alcala, who turned into a reliever, and then a center field prospect near the bottom of the top 30 in the organization. So I don't know what you guys think. I think they need to get a borderline top 100 prospect in order to move Rogers, because he's elite right now. And if you're going to move him with team control left, you need to get a legit arm. You know, not an organization's best starting pitching prospect. I'm not saying that, but someone who's, you know, in the top five in the organization and maybe, right at the edge of a top 100 overall prospect, and then some throw-ins after that. But I don't know. What do you guys think? Is that a fair return for Taylor Rogers?
Dex?
Yeah, I think you could definitely get like a fourth or fifth organizational prospect for him. Someone always overpays for relievers. And to be honest, relieving is something you should always be stacking up on if you're a contender going into into the postseason. I mean, that is the most obtainable thing. Someone's going to overpay. When I look at the trade deadline, you know, you don't have to, as much as we've been calling for trades and, you know, at least listen to these offers, I think the Twins would be foolish not to at least walk away with, like you said, Jake, at least two, like top 100 prospects, if not like organizationally wise, some other teams, like at least one or two top five prospects from other teams. I think someone was going to give a good amount for Nelson Cruz, but Taylor Rogers is probably going to get you more in return because he still has that year of team control. And I can see him helping a team down in the postseason as being an elite arm in a high leverage situation. So yeah, I would be shocked if they are not able to get at least two top 100, if not top five organizational prospects from another team.
I agree. But Jake, I will ask you this question because it becomes important now. You referenced the Presley trade. So that being said, you know, Dex is right. The question is this. How much do you trust Derek Falvey to get the right guy? Like, what did the 2018, because that was a purge. What did the 2018 purge do to, because that's now what we can look at, right? And say, that's the point of reference. We now have that. We didn't in 2018. So, Jake, as a guy who follows the Twins farm system probably far closer than Declan or I do, what is your faith if the Rodgers trade is made and they do come out with a guy that looks, oh, man, this guy might be good, that they're going to get it right?
Well, my faith is not that high right now because right. they haven't done a good job at all at the trade deadline. The one good trade they made was Escobar. They got Jahan Duran back in that trade. That was a good trade for sure. But other than that, their trades haven't been very good. We've talked about 2017. They traded away their closer for nothing and then made the playoffs. We talked about 2019. Those trades. The Romo trade was fine. That was a solid trade. Sam Dyson was a terrible trade, obviously. And there have been others that haven't gone well. So, I mean, when you look at, I guess for me, I look at the Presley trade as the closest comp because you're trading a reliever with team control of, you know, for prospects. And so far that doesn't look good. So no, I don't have a lot of confidence right now because until it's like we were talking about last week. You know, this is just an objective, in my opinion, an objective analysis until they actually show us evidence that they can do these things well, like make trades and develop starters. Then it would be disingenuous to say that I have a lot of faith in them to do that because they haven't done it yet. You know, once they do it, I'll say I have faith in them. But we need to see the actual evidence first. So I don't know what choice we really have. I mean, you know, I mean, they're going to make trades. So
well, we don't have one. You're right.
Yeah, but. But no, am I super confident that they're going to be, you know, any, you know, like the Tampa Bay Rays, who always seem to make amazing trades. You know, they're nowhere near that level right now. So no, I don't have a ton of confidence. Do you? I mean,
1,000%. No, the problem is that I do think the trade would probably be the smart move to make, because if you're not going to bring back Rodgers, if you're just going to bring him back for 2022, and again, I will continue to say this, we don't even know how much of a 2022 there's going to be. So if you are just going to bring him back for 2022 and then allow him to walk as a free agent after that, then I think trading him at the deadline in July of this year makes a lot of sense. I just thought I meant 17. I thought from the trades that they made at that time that we would be seeing far more positive results by now, and we're really not. And that's the thing that concerns me. And I think it's flat out fair to ask now. And this is an incredible thing to say based on why Derek Falvey was hired. I think it's very fair to ask, what's this organization's ability to evaluate pitching, which is what we thought was going to be the strength. Like, we thought that was going to be the difference between the old school Twins and these Twins. So I don't have a ton of faith. I don't have much actually right now at all. But that being said, I also don't think that can probably stand in the way of you making what might be a smart trade, especially with your team hopelessly out of it and battling in this weird little tournament that the Royals, Tigers, and Twins seem to have to try and avoid being the most pathetic team in what is no question a pathetic division. This division stinks. And, you know, the Tigers series might have been fun, but it doesn't mean a thing.
Yeah, and just to clarify, I think we could lump both 17 and 18 into this group, right? 17 is when they traded Kinsler and they made the playoffs. 18 is when they traded Escobar and Dozier and Presley. Both of those deadlines kind of played out the same way. The Twins were kind of on the losing end of that, again, other than the Eduardo Escobar trade. Mm-hmm. The results have been extremely underwhelming in basically all of these trade deadlines. So it's they just have to prove us wrong. And until they do, then we'll keep criticizing them for it. So who else is going to be moved besides the obvious? So to me, Nelson Cruz and Andrelton Simmons and probably Hansel Robles are basically guaranteed to be moved. Right. I mean, there's no reason to keep those guys on the team. But who are some other names? I know you don't, you guys don't think, or at least Judd doesn't think Berríos is going to be traded. I think he will be. But who else do you think gets moved, and are there any surprises in there?
So Dukes has reported that we shouldn't expect this to be a fire sale. And I think that the Twins might be willing to borderline go fire sale, but I think where Doogie's right, and this goes back to my Berríos theory, is I think their asking price is going to be so high. And here's part of the problem, and I get it. What we just talked about is going to make any sensible human being gun shy. So, you know, you have not, for the most part, in what you would consider your big deals, gotten the necessary bang for your buck back, right? Like, you're banking on prospects, and you've gotten guys back, but they're certainly not developing at the rate that you expected. So if you're going to trade Berríos, you're going to ask for a ton and almost try and make sure that you're insulated to where the players that you get back are sure things. I think you could trade Donaldson if you gifted him to a team and picked up a little bit of his salary, but basically just said, take him, give us a low-level prospect back. I don't know that they're going to swallow hard and do that. So I think it's Dex. I think it's Cruz. Mm-hmm. I think it's Simmons. Mm-hmm. I think it's Rogers because that's doable. I think it's Robles. But after that, I'm not so sure.
The only ones that you didn't list, and this one I think it's more likely that it happens in the winter than it is in a couple weeks, the deadline. But Max Kepler. Can someone take a bait on it? Because he is now playing better since he's coming back from injury. He looks more like the traditional Max Kepler, a guy who doesn't hit for average well, but draws a ton of walks, has some pop. He's an athletic outfielder. And in 22-23, he's only on the hook for 6.7, 8.5. So basically, he's on the hook for $13 million the next 2 years. And if Max Kepler is who he is right now, I would probably take a bet that I can get a pretty decent player out of that for $13 million. He does have a team option in 2024 for $10 million or a $1 million buyout. So the team can basically say, all right, if this doesn't work out or we don't believe in you to give you another contract when you're in your 31 season, all right, 2 years of Max Kepler is pretty good there. I'm curious if someone does take a bait on there. I've always been more bullish on Kepler. I think he is a little misunderstood with his batting average. I think he draws some good walks. His splits have always been so weird where he couldn't hit left-handed pitching to save his life for the first 4 years, and all of a sudden he figured it out, and now he's kind of back to being unplayable against left-handed pitching. But I think he brings enough to the table, and he's proved enough that for $14 million for over 2 years, by the way, so basically a $7 million per, I think I would take it if I'm a franchise team looking for a corner outfielder. And by the way, the Twins have need to put players in these corner positions. I wouldn't be hesitant to trade him. I think it's more likely in the winter, but I'd be curious if someone picks it up and makes it happen in at the trade deadline.
And here, I totally agree with you, and it's a great point about Kepler. And like you said, they have two guys that are basically almost like Kepler clones now, right? Kirilloff and Larnick, and those guys are going to be here the next 7 years, I think, right? That they're cornerstones. The fact that they're hitting as well as they are in their rookie year is impressive. So if Kepler's expendable, the question is, who do you trade him to? And I look at the Braves right now. So the Braves are, what, four or five games back, maybe in the East, and they just lost Acuna for the year with that ACL awful. There, which sucks. Yeah, mm-hmm. Sucks for the game, sucks for everyone. But they have a need now in right field. So I wonder if the Braves would be a good match to get Kepler. Kepler, he's like Dex said, he still has multiple years left on his contract, so maybe it's not a perfect fit. But if they're looking to make a push this year and they want to, you know, insert a legitimate MLB starter into their lineup, Kepler could work for them. So, but yeah, I mean, they're going to have to do something with him, right? I mean, they've got Kirilloff and Larnick. They've got Royce Lewis coming, and even guys like Brent Rooker are depth, you know. So I mean, he's definitely I wouldn't be surprised at all. I think you're right. I think it makes more sense probably in the winter. But again, if there's a team with an obvious need like the Braves, it could happen. It could happen this year. Pineda is another guy, but I just don't know what they'll get for Pineda at this point.
I agree. Yeah, he has been hurt. Colome has rebounded a little bit, but he's been such a bust. I don't think you get a thing for him. The thing on Kepler that I'm a little bit curious about is this. One, I do agree that they would move him for the right price. Two, I'm with Dex. I think it would be a wintertime move, probably more than a deadline move. But that contract is so favorable to the team. And they are the Twins. I wonder if they would hold on to him because he and Polanco, you know, signed such good contracts as far as the team goes. The other thing, too, is I think we have to be prepared for the eventuality that Sano is going to be out. And so Kirilov, who made a great play in the 10th to save Tyler Duffy's bacon yesterday, I think is the first baseman of the future. The one Sano factor I become curious about, because I've seen this bandied about, and I don't know if it's true or not, because patience-wise, I mean, he's gone to a platoon. They lifted that for a couple days against the Tigers, which I didn't get, and actually started him against righties, where, and then he struggled again. I think he went 0 for 6 with like 4 strikeouts. But are they going to give Sano a chance to replace Nelson Cruz as the DH next year, or are they going to plug him in as the DH for the rest of this year? I really think there's a fighting chance that Miguel Sano is not on the opening day roster in 2022, if there is one. And so, therefore, Kepler might stick around and play a corner outfield spot, because Kirilov is going to graduate or play first base. And then Rooker, very well, I wouldn't be shocked if he is in some type of platoon or if he is the DH when Cruz is gone in 2022.
Yeah, but what are they going to do with Sano? I mean, they owe him, what, like $9 or $10 million next
year? I think they're going to cut him loose. I think they're going to find a way. I think they'll find a taker. I mean, he's not due that much where it's going to break your bank. And I don't see how you keep going down this path of the same thing. Like, every time they think that there's a turnaround, right? Like, Miguel got hot. He hit a couple balls to the wall. Let's play him against a right-hander. He strikes out 3 times or 2 times. I don't know how much patience they have left, and I'm not blaming them for that. So that's what I think, that they might just basically jettison him and say it's a lost cause. At this point, he can hit home runs. But, I mean, Jake, you look at the big at-bats he has, you look at how many times you need him or you think you do, and he does something either dumb or has a terrible at-bat.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not defending the performance of Miguel Sano. I mean, you know, he's been really bad this year. All I'm saying is I have a hard time seeing them eating like $9 million or whatever it is. To me, I think it's more likely they plug him in at DH the rest of this year with once Cruz is traded. And then the first half of next year, if he's still terrible, the first half of next year, then you either try to move him or just cut him loose. But that's a lot of money for the Twins to eat. You know, this isn't a big market team. He's been what, replacement level at best this year, you know, so I
he's a platoon player. Would, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at just performance, absolutely. Although you could say the same thing about Kepler until 2 weeks ago. And he's getting really hot now, but he has more of a track record than Sano, I guess. But, I just don't see them eating that much money. Like, I agree with you from a baseball perspective. Totally. I mean, he's a platoon player at best, like you said, but that's a lot of money for the Twins to eat. I think they're still going to try to get something out of him, but it's they're in a bad spot. They signed him to an extension. I don't know why they signed him to an extension.
How does he work at DH though? That's my question. I mean, his best job right now, the job he does best, is first base.
It's weird to think that he honestly could now go to a National League team, because he can play first.
Yes.
I would have never thought that even a year ago, let alone 2 years ago.
And he
could
play some third. Like, you could plug him in there. You're right, Dex.
Yeah, I mean, you are right. So maybe it's possible that they gift him to another team, just like we're talking about with Donaldson, where they just say, take on half his contract and give us back a low-level prospect and just wash your hands of him. So I think that's possible. But I think if they don't trade him, I have a hard time seeing them just DFAing him and eating all that money.
Yeah, I could see them in the winter. I do not think he's gone at the deadline. So I'm saying I could see him in the winter being traded, basically, but it's essentially saying we've tried. We've done everything we possibly can. It's just, there's just so many destructive at bats now. I mean, they're just rally killers, right? And it's always the same thing. He always like looks amazed that he made an out. Like the Twins, this Twins team, just a side tangent here, this Twins team has some weird, it reminds me of 2018 type things. Sano, his lost puppy dog look of what happened? How did I strike three, really? And it's like, dude, you struck out again. And the other one that drives me nuts, and I'm not the first person in the market to mention this, the other one that just kills me is Hansel Robles, when he gets a save, acts like he's on the 60 or the 27 Yankees. Like, this amount of celebrating that Robles does when it's like, dude, your team stinks. You have not had a good year. Like, it's cool you got to save, and I'm not saying don't celebrate, but like, watch the theatrics you get. And it's like, do you have any sense of how bad this team is? I'm not saying that it can't be fun. You know what? Polanco, homers, the team jumps around, no problem there. But Robles does these self-serving celebrations, like, closed it out again, guys. It's like, what are you doing? Like, why? It's different if guys come up right and high-five you and stuff, or the outfielders, if they win, like, jump up and all spin around. No problem with that. I'm all for fun. But when you're doing this self-serving, closed out, got another save, didn't I? It's like, you know how bad this team's been? And by the way, buddy, you have not been that great.
Well, and I think there's a difference between Jorge Polanco, who's been an outstanding player on this team for a long time and is a big part of the team and is having a good year, hitting a walk-off home run and celebrating, versus, like you said, a guy who they brought in who really hasn't had a very good year doing that. You might have to have a little bit more self-awareness. That said, generally, I don't have a problem with any of that because baseball needs a lot more of that.
Sure.
And I think if you start sort of legislating between guys who can do it and guys who can't do it versus, like, based on how the team is doing, like, I totally get what you're saying, but I also think just the general trend of moving in that direction is a good thing for baseball.
I think the thing about baseball celebrations is this: when your teammates look at you and they're like, dude, what are you doing? It's a bad idea. When they join you, it's like, oh, cool. Like Polanco, right? Because that was an over the top, you're not that good, but it was fun. And he hit a home run to end a crazy game. And I think Polanco's a fun guy. Like, I think Polanco gets it. So I was like, that's cool. Good for him. Good for them. But I think guys look at Hansel celebrating and they're like, huh? What are you doing? So baseball needs fun, but it also needs guys who are, like, aware of what the sport's about. And it's just, this Twins team, there's certain things about this team. I mean, this goes back to the Donaldson thing. You know, it's not sticky. Okay, that's great, dude, but your team stinks. Like, this is, like, go to the media all you want and harp on this. I like that. But don't act like, and I think his teammates looked at that again, like, what are you saying? We suck. Look at our record. So I do think that there's a difference between self-celebration mode and what involves your team, which baseball does need badly.
Did you hear what Morneau said on a broadcast a couple of weeks ago when he was talking about that 2011 team where they won a walk-off to avoid losing 100 games in the last game of the year?
I remember that.
And he said all the guys were jumping around, and he said something to the effect of, like, that was the most embarrassed I've been on a baseball field because we shouldn't be jumping around celebrating. Right. Avoiding losing 100 games. And that was the fun bunch, right? You remember the fun bunch?
Luke Hughes, Danny Valencia.
Valencia, I guess, was on those teams.
Yep.
Plouf, who I really like. But Plouf was on those teams. You know, some guys like Rene Tostoni, and I don't know who was technically in the fun bunch and who wasn't. But I'm with Morneau on that one. That's a pretty ridiculous reason to, like, be jumping around.
The Star Tribune ran a picture the next day after that win, and it looked like they, honest to God, had clinched a playoff spot.
I know what you're talking about.
Hey, kids, how's the water?
It's full of weeds.
I can't move my legs.
Your arms are free, right?
Yeah.
Wave them around. It's fun.
You kidding me?
This can't be happening.
This is Jamie from the Aquaside Company. Clear your water completely. Destroy weeds, algae, and the muck that's preventing you from enjoying your waterfront property. We know your time in the water is precious. We're the Aquaside Company. Call 800-328-9350 or visit aquaside.com. State permit may be required.
Remember, yeah.
Guys with their hands up, extended, running around, they avoided 100 losses. That's my only point, is have a sense of where your team's at.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair. Absolutely.
Okay, Jake, you sent me this in our prep notes. Fangraphs has the Twins at a 1% chance to make the playoffs.
Yes.
So despite the sweep of Detroit tackling Goff, Fangraphs has the Twins at a 1% chance, which, by the way, sort of surprised me. I thought it might be -8.5, but 1% chance.
Yeah, it's pretty pitiful.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you're good. It's pretty pitiful. Because last week, what was it? Last week or 2 weeks ago, like, it was like 10. Like, it creeped back up to 10 afterwards, and it was just like the kind of people got excited again. It's like, dude, look at what has happened. They just swept the Tigers. They've been beaten up on the Tigers. The White Sox took, like, what, 6 of 8 over them over the last week as well. and they beat the Tigers 4 in a row, and it's like, yeah, it doesn't do anything for our playoff projections. You guys are still 1% chance. You'd have to win, Bill did the math, like 53-19 to get to 93 wins. Like, that is, I know, like, the 06 team pulled off something similar. 09 was insane down the last 30 games. I don't see any chance that they can do something similar to get to 90 wins. If they got to 82 wins, it would be a remarkable stretch.
No way with this pitching.
No, I completely agree. But I want to go down this path for 1 second.
Sure.
Let's just like live in like a fever dream for 1 second and say, all right, if we're looking ahead 3 months from now and the Twins have somehow miraculously made the playoffs, how would it happen? Mm-hmm. Right? How would it happen from this point? And so I think what they have to do, I tweeted this yesterday. There are 15 games between now, between the All-Star break and the trade deadline. They have to go 13-2 to get to 500. Right. So they have to come out and basically sweep the 4-game series from Detroit, take 3 or 4 from the White Sox, take 3 or 4 from the Angels and sweep Detroit again. If they do that, they get to 500. Maybe the front office doesn't sell. And maybe they acquire some bullpen help and call up Josh Winder and call up Duran and go on some big run in the second half. This is not going to happen. I'm just saying, if we're looking at like just ridiculous scenarios, that's what has to happen. They have to go at least 13-2 or 14-1 in this 2-week stretch for them not to sell. Right. And then continue that against some of the best teams at baseball in August.
That's the problem, right?
Right.
So if you come out of the break and you go to Detroit, you play 4 games, including a double header in 3 days. Let's say you win 3 of 4 there. Okay. So now you've won what, 7 of 8 and you're excited. And of course, the key to that is it's 7 of 8 against the Tigers. So then you go to the White Sox. You got to sweep them because you're not going to be convinced of a thing until you sweep the White Sox. Okay, so let's say you do that. Then you get Ohtani and the Angels, who aren't a great team, but he's having a phenomenal year. And I don't know how your pitching is going to hold up against that team. And then, Jake, what you're saying is, and you brought this up a couple weeks ago, and it's the best point. Then you get into the meat of a tough schedule. Because when you struggled for the first 2+ months, go back and look at the bad teams that you had a chance to beat and you didn't beat. That's the most incredible thing. Like the one thing that you might have optimism about is if you said, whew, April and May and part of June in the rearview mirror, look at all those killer teams that we played, right? Like it was tough, but now it's the Orioles and, you know, just take your pick of bad teams. But Jake, you were right. They went through the heart of what should have been the easiest portions of their schedule and somehow were terrible. I mean, that's the thing about the 2021 Twins that's such an indictment. When you should have been stockpiling wins to then have in your back pocket for August and September, you were losing to teams that aren't good.
That's exactly right. They had one of the easiest schedules in baseball and one of the worst records. So, and this is obviously not happening, but if you just want, as a Twins fan, if you want to hold on to hope, because hope is a good thing even when it's not realistic, then you can say, okay, if they go on some huge run in the next 2 weeks after the All-Star break, maybe they can get to a point where they're like 5 games back. But even then, if the front office didn't sell, it would be a terrible decision. And I think they'll start selling probably immediately after the All-Star break. So this is a non-issue. I just wanted to go down that path for a minute since we're like 99.9% critical on here this year, as we should be.
I was going to say, happens. How can we not be?
How can we not be? How can anybody not be extremely critical of this team when you go into the season as at least co-favorites to win the Central and certainly, you know, a favorite to make the playoffs, and you're one of the worst teams in baseball. So it is what it is.
Last thing, Twins take fireballing youngster Chase Petty with their first round pick, 26 overall. From the same town and actually went to the same high school as Mike Trout, was drafted with the 26th pick, which amazingly Mike Trout was too.
I think it was conflicted. I think they're rival high schools, but like same town. Like, okay. I think he was like the first, like he's only like the third New Jersey player to be taken in the first round since or something.
So Chase Petty is the pick. Now, what's interesting here is twofold. One is, despite the fact that he's known as a pitching guru, which he obviously has not been, Derek Falvey has, for the most part, drafted a lot of bats with his first round picks since becoming the Twins chief baseball officer president of baseball operations. The second thing is Chase Petty is a high school kid, which means this is going to unfortunately take some time. Jake, your thoughts on the fact that the Twins felt emboldened enough, despite their complete lack of success in 2021, to take a kid who won't be up for probably, what's fair, 4 or 5 years?
3 at least.
At least.
I mean, three is a fast track, right?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's if everything goes
perfectly.
So
let's say 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's a really interesting draft pick because that tells me, I have no idea. It's the MLB draft, right? Like almost like nobody knows anything about any of these kids, you know, so I'm not going to evaluate the pick itself other than he's a fireball or whatever. But what this tells me is that Falvey feels completely comfortable with his job security. I think if you are, you know, being told by ownership or whatever, if you're really feeling pressure, like you have 1 or 2 years here to figure this out or you're gone, you don't take a high school pitcher in the first round. Right. Who's not going to be here for like Declan said, 3 years at the very, very best and probably 4 or 5. So that tells me that they feel like they're here for the long term and there's no real pressure on them. And that jives with an interview with Jim Polad. So Jim Polad went on with Chris Atterbury over the weekend and Atterbury basically asked him like, you know, you hired who you thought were the best people for, you know, baseball ops, you know, referring to Falvey and Levine. And he's like, you know, do you have anybody that you can go to kind of evaluate, to check their own performance, to evaluate their performance? And basically what he was getting at is, you know, some people are saying that Falvey and Levine aren't doing a good job. Are you evaluating that in any way? And Polad basically said, no, I don't know of any resources to evaluate them, and said in the interview that he still has full confidence in them and all of these types of things. So like that to me is not good. Like even if these guys are doing a great job, that wouldn't be good. You shouldn't just give unchecked power to the front office with no threat of losing their job. And we saw with Terry Ryan, who was an unbelievable GM in his first tenure, and his second tenure, I think, was not good at all. And that went on way too long, you know? And it seems like maybe the same thing is going on here. Again, I'm not saying that they should be fired, but I do think it's a situation where they should be given, I would give them like one more year to right this ship. Because it hasn't been good in terms of their decision making, and so the fact that Polad is basically saying, you know, I trust them completely, I don't think that's good. I don't think that's a good situation.
So here's my question off that then: what is the checks and balances for postseason evaluation of baseball ops and Rocco and the coaching staff? That's my question. So if Jim Polad, which is not. I agree with what you said. I'm not surprised. Like, I didn't think that Jim had an evaluation technique. I mean, Terry Ryan had a lifetime contract until he was fired. So, and that doesn't, that's a very contradictory thing. You have a lifetime contract, but now you're fired. So I'm not surprised by Jim Polad telling Chris that. But my question is, and this goes back to my question after every season of every team, but it's especially true with the Twins. Sometimes it's a small question. Sometimes it's large. This time it's large. What did you learn from this? And what changes, most importantly, are you going to make to rectify the mistakes? Now, previously, the last 2 years, I think my biggest what did you learn question was to Rocco and the front office about decisions made when it came to starting pitching in the playoffs, because I still think it's inexcusable that Maeda and then especially Barrios in the 2 losses to the Astros last fall were both yanked prematurely while pitching well for a bullpen that wasn't nearly as reliable as the Twins somehow thought because they brought in the wrong guys. This time, my question is much broader, Jake. It's a question of what have you learned from this complete disaster and meltdown? And look, a lot of your problems are self-inflicted. Like, you made a lot of bad moves here. Alex Colome, it's your job to have a feel for where he's at. Robles has not been awful, but I'm sorry. That was not a signing where we all said, this is going to work out great. I think he had a 10-something ERA with the Angels last year. So that was a roll of the dice, and it's worked out okay, but he's certainly not a great closer type of – I mean, he's a pitcher who you can get by with. But there's a lot of problems here. Sano's disintegration, which, by the way, is now in its second year. So my question to Falvey, Levine, and Rocco is, what have you learned? Because if you're going to come back in 2022 and bang your head against the wall again, that's not really a solid strategy. If you're going to say, well, what we did should have worked, that's not a strategy. That's just a recipe for more problems next season.
Yeah, and I agree. And I'm just getting really – I'm getting a little tired of this narrative that, like, these guys have done an amazing job and we shouldn't question them. Like, if you look at what they've done, this is year six, right? They've made the playoffs three times. One of those times, they traded at the deadline and then lost a wild card game. And then two other times, they got swept badly. They weren't competitive. They're 0-6 in the playoff games, and they've had three seasons where the team has drastically underperformed. Right? Two seasons, 18 and 21. Right? Because it's 17, 18, 19, 20. Yeah. So this is year five. So like, what have they done? Like, they've improved systems behind the scenes. That's what we're told. I'm sure they have. You know, I we have no way of really validating that. But they haven't developed pitching. They haven't won at all in the playoffs. 18 and 21, were disasters. And like you said, they mismanaged those playoff games. So like, I think they've done a decent job, but I just don't get this idea that like they're untouchable, you know? Again, I don't think they should be fired, but I do think it should be a situation where you have like one more year to prove that you can develop pitching and win in the playoffs. Like, that's not unreasonable. They haven't won a single playoff game. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this is, again, this is their fifth year. I said 6 year earlier, this is their fifth year, but like, why is it in a lot of markets that would be totally unacceptable, right? And they would be getting ripped all the time.
Well, yeah. Yes, because the last 2 years, their handling of their pitchers in the playoff games has been awful.
Yeah, and
they started Randy Dobnik in Yankee Stadium. They might as well have started Declan Goff.
And like,
he had no chance.
These critiques are not personal. Like, I feel like we have a thing here, and I do this too all the time, where I say, he's a really nice guy. I really like him as a guy, but blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, who cares? Like, Falvey and Levine do seem like nice guys. I don't know, but it doesn't matter. You're evaluating their performance in as public figures. That's it, right? And I think their performance has been pretty spotty. I think it's been pretty up and down. And I think we all should acknowledge that, and that's okay. Just because they're nice guys doesn't mean we can't say you've done a bunch of stuff wrong, you know?
But
that just drives me nuts. It drives me nuts.
But I'm willing to cut them slack. But I want them to learn.
Right.
And I'm getting the feeling more and more that this organization doesn't learn from its mistakes, which is very weird because they're very inquisitive. They ask a lot of questions. I'm told they involve a lot of people, which is great. So there's certainly opinions flying around, which is, you know, fine. That being said, I guess I look at what they've done and my question is, what have you learned? And which is why I'm also curious, if you trade Rodgers, what have you learned there? What do you get back? I am underwhelmed by when they have traded the returns. And I mean, the fact that they still don't completely trust Alcala, for instance, who right now should be a lights out guy. Like, that trade should have resulted in the return of a lights out guy who's pitching right now. And against lefties, he struggles big time. He's got some potential still, but he's in his mid-20s. We're past the point of potential. So that's my question. What have you learned? And if you never learn, then you can't be employed long term. It's just not going to work. So,
and if you don't have any check on you, then you don't have as much motivation to learn.
You're right.
You know?
You're right. All right. Happy All-Star Game. Shohei Ohtani, yes. Home run derby. Should be great fun. Lance Lynn, I'm told, not happy Ohtani is going to start. I think he thinks he should start. I love Lance Lynn. What a piece of work he is. All right. We are done. See you, Jake. Thank you, Declan.